Chapter 4. The upper levels of the Temple of Almatra were small towers occupied by bunk rooms and private chambers. Niln showed Gorm and Gleebec to the southwest tower on the third floor, to a tiny chamber illuminated by a thin slit of a window on the south wall. It was furnished with two decrepit bunks, two small chests, and an old washbin.
"You may have your things sent here," said Niln, inviting them in.
Gorm dropped his rucksack on the bottom bunk. Gleebec set down his single Gilton and a dead rat he'd somehow acquired.
"Done," said Gorm.
"I see. Well, we shall have to pay a visit to the general store. Come, I'll take you to meet the others."
"So I ain't the first hero you've recruited, then?"
"Oh, no, Mr. Ingerson. You are the fifth hero of destiny, and once we have the sixth, I shall become the seventh. We are remarkably close to beginning our quest."
"I'll try to contain my excitement."
They exited the tower to a large rooftop terrace. Topiary bushes and small tea trees grew from decorative pots, while weeds and small shrubs crept through cracks in the cobblestones and shingles. The air smelled of old wood and new leaves. There were also a lot of statues. Many were the sculptures one would expect, depictions of the All-Mother and her saints and her sacred falcons, but they were scattered around pieces that didn't belong in a temple, or anywhere, as Gorm would have it. He glowered at a giant teacup carved from marble filled with mahogany brew, scoffed at a large sandstone eyeball clasped delicately in a great onyx hand, and was disgusted to see an extensive collection of granite sea creatures scattered through the bushes. A man was draped over the bench closest to them, plucking a cedar and mahogany lute. He wore a bright gold and vermilion tunic beneath a leather jerkin and matching tights. He was thin, as was his neat black mustache. His hat was wide, as was his grin.
"Hello, Master Niln," he said.
"Another successful day?"
"Indeed. Gorm Ingerson, meet Haraldin Strummans, our party's bard," said Niln.
"A pleasure," Haraldin said. "Why does your name sound familiar?"
"Couldn't say," said Gorm.
"Mr. Ingerson is our new warrior," said the High Scribe.
"My condolences. What are you in for?" asked Haraldin.
"I'll thank you for not making such jokes, Mr. Strummans," said Niln, frowning.
"I'd wait until I stopped first, were I you. What's with the gabbo, target practice?"
The bard produced a throwing knife and casually sighted it on Gleebec, who yelped and ducked behind Gorm. Gorm decided that Haraldin wasn't quite so tolerable after all.
"Gleebec is Mr. Ingerson's squire," Niln interjected.
"You can't be serious," Haraldin sneered. "Why would we possibly bring a goblin along? It's unhygienic, and what use would it be?"
"I was thinking the same thing about a bard," Gorm shot back.
According to the Heroes Guild official guide to professional heroics, bards were a class of hero possessing varied talents. Uplifting songs could inspire a party to even greater acts of valor and daring. In Gorm's experience, they weren't good for much beyond absorbing incoming arrows.
"Mr. Strummans is more than just a bard," Niln said. "He's actually a rather accomplished, improvisational locksmith? Or perhaps an acquisition specialist?"
"Why don't you just say he's a thief?"
"Don't say it!"
The bard hushed him, leaping to his feet. After a conspiratorial look around, he continued in a hurried whisper,
"We don't use certain words to describe certain professional services that I used to provide. Because if certain parties were to think that I was engaging in certain professions, a certain Benny Hookhand would certainly take me out to paint the town red, and I'd be the paint, if you catch my meaning."
"We're on top of a building," said Gorm. "Who's going to hear?"
"Don't underestimate Benny Hookhand.
Besides, I prefer to be a bard."
"What, really?"
"Oh, yes," Haraldin added, strumming a chord and waggling his eyebrows.
"You'd be surprised what women will do for a man with a lute."
"Now that's unhygienic."
"Perhaps we should continue on," said Niln hurriedly.
They walked across the terrace to where Gorm could see two figures facing away from each other on opposite ends of a stone bench near the balcony that overlooked the city. One was a man in royal purple robes reading a book. His head was shaven, although he had a neat black goatee. The other was a young woman in vibrant orange. Her long dark hair was loose, save for a single thin braid. She was not reading anything, but was instead very actively engaged in not looking at the man. Both wore deep scowls.
"Oh, gods," said Gorm, You hired a solomancer and a noctomancer?
In the threads of magic that weave the world of Arth, there are two directions, the warp and the weft. A mage is a person who, through birthright and scholarship, can see and harness these threads for power or profit, or, as is so often the case, both. The great orders of wizardry are most notably distinguished by the threads of magic their members can see and touch. Solomancers of the sun grasp the weft, the powers of fire and water, light and life. Noctomancers of the moon wield the warp of magic, the forces of air and earth, shadow and death. There are many other differences between solomancers and noctomancers of varying degrees and nature, ceremonial, cultural, philosophical, and all too often, violent.
"Oh, it gets better than that," said Heraldin.
"Master Jin, Lady Laruna," said Niln. "This is Gorm Ingerson, our new warrior, and his squire, Gleebec."
"Gleebec!"
The wizard looked up with a face too gaunt to be friendly. Narrow Ruskin eyes peered from within pools of shadow above a hawkish nose and a thin mouth.
"I see," he said, scratching his beard. His vowels spun out slightly longer, traces of a Ruskin accent. "I am Jin Urgorid of the Order of the Moon, High Counselor of the Circle of the Red Hawk."
"I'm Laruna Trullin, Order of the Sun," said the Solomancer, talking over Jin, 8th rank mage with the Heroes Guild.
Her face, like the rest of her, was sharp and thin, and not unhandsome. Gorm introduced himself and Gleebec.
"I find it hard to believe you two don't mind working together," he added.
"Actually, I'd prefer if we don't talk about it," Jin said.
"It's best if you address us one at a time," said Laruna, staring at Gorm pointedly, "and pretend the other isn't there."
Gorm turned to Niln.
"Is this how it's to be? They spend the whole quest not acknowledging one another?"
"Gods, let's hope so," said Heraldin. "It's so much better this way."
"I think Mr. Ingerson was hoping to see that you can act as a team," Niln told the mages, nodding in earnest encouragement.
"Oh, I've worked with many apprentices before," said Jin. "She won't get in our way."
Laruna spoke over him.
"The new blood? Rank 1 heroes go on quests all the time. He'll catch up."
The mages shot each other loathing glares.
"I don't trust the Heroes Guild on matters of magic," said Jin to Gorm loudly. "They're clearly working with forces they don't understand."
"I'd say the guild knows a lot about effectiveness," Laruna remarked to no one in particular. "They're far more able to get things done than stodgy old counselors from the academy."
"Old?" Jin demanded. "I'm not yet 30. I'm the youngest man ever to sit on the Academic Council of Mages."
"And it's gone straight to his head," Laruna told Gorm. "Besides, it's all books and theory at the academy. I've actually been on quests. I'm 8th rank.
"Perhaps you'd value academic achievement more if you had any, apprentice," snapped Jin.
Laruna ignored the wizard.
"I only need 1 more counselor's vote, and I'll advance instantly," she told Gorm. "Guess who's holding me back?"
"You'll have my vote when you're ready," said Jin.
"I am ready," said Laruna. "You're just too stuck up and self-important to see it."
"It only seems that way to the ignorant.
Watch your mouth, Candlewand."
"Enough," said Gorm. "Honestly, if you two find each other so awful, I don't see why you've chosen to sit at the same bench."
The mages seemed somewhat perplexed by the sentiment.
"This is the best view in the temple," said Jin.
"Why should he have it?"
said Laruna.
"Just please don't burn anything down," sighed Niln.
They left the mages to their silent feud and worked their way to the side of the terrace, opposite Gorm and Gleebec's bunk.
"Well, there's an interesting party dynamic," Gorm remarked. "Solomancers and noctomancers don't always get along so great, but that was something else."
"They share an unfortunate history," Niln conceded. "After Jin objected and blocked Laruna's ascension to full magehood, they had a rather nasty duel."
"So, mages blast each other all the time."
The Academy of Mages recognized sorceress duels as a valid method of establishing social standing, or settling personal disagreements, or figuring out whose turn it was to do the dishes.
"Yes, but said duels are supposed to be sanctioned," said Niln. "Unsanctioned duels must be reviewed in a committee hearing to determine how said duel started. That's the problem.
Why? How'd the duel start?
Niln stopped short. Please don't ask that question, he said, pointing at Gorm. Ever.
Heraldin stepped in.
They'll each swear the other started it, and then they'll just swear at each other, and then the fireworks will begin.
They've burned down 3 courthouses so far, said Niln, shaking his head.
They're that bad, said Gorm.
Bad enough to land them here, said Heraldin with a grin. Niln rebuked the bard again, but Gorm wasn't listening. He was watching a tall figure who leaned against the far wall, a very large man wearing dark leather armor and a black hood. Most of his ebony face was concealed behind a crimson scarf, but even at this distance Gorm could recognize him. The man's face had haunted Gorm for 20 years.
Eheen, Gorm whispered.
Who? Asked Heraldin.
No, that's Geist.
Gorm shook his head.
It's Eheen the Red.
Eheen the Red? Realization lit up the bard's face. That's where I know your name! You're the berserker who ran and abandoned Johann!
Gorm had already stopped paying attention to the bard again. A flicker of surprised recognition crossed Eheen's face, but he quickly resumed staring stoically into the distance.
Eheen! Gorm said, extending a hand. Eheen! It's me, Gorm Ingerson!
Eheen, or perhaps Geist, said nothing.
Eheen? Or Geist? Whatever you call yourself, I can see you know me.
The man didn't move a muscle. Don't take this the wrong way, said Niln. Geist does not speak.
Not at all?
Not for over 20 years, according to guild records. Not since the dungeon of... Ah, Niln trailed off awkwardly. I suppose you know. It had been 21 years since the dark magics of Azanon the Spider King had bestowed a renewed vigor and a misanthropic worldview upon every corpse within 100 miles of his black lair. It had taken Gorm and his party over a full day to carve a path through the dead army to Azanon's front gate, and then the real horrors had begun.
I ain't been the same since, said Gorm. I don't know why I thought he would.
Indeed, said Niln. However, I believe him to be a valuable member of our team. He was our first volunteer, after all.
Yeah, no surprise there, said Heraldin.
Oh?
Niln tried to interject. I don't think...
Go look up the statue's file at the Heroes Guild, said Heraldin, gesturing at Geist. His license has more points than a dire porcupine's backside, because for the past 20 years he's been throwing himself at the biggest, nastiest monsters he can find, usually alone. All since he was horribly shamed. Any guesses as to what's going on?
Gorm knew.
He wants to die.
There's a clever dwarf, said the bard. And remember, he's the only one who volunteered for this gig.
Yes, well, thank you, Heraldin, said Niln, without gratitude.
How do you know any of this if he doesn't talk?
Gorm asked. Oh, he can communicate, said Niln. He has official papers, and he fills out enough paperwork to follow guild procedures. And it's amazing what you can say with body language.
Especially when you're using someone else's body, added Heraldin. Geist was as still and silent as the stone walrus he was standing beside, yet there was something in his posture, in the manner with which he set his jaw, or in the way his eyes managed to always be staring somewhere else, that said very clearly, go away.
Perhaps it would be better to continue this discussion elsewhere, said Niln. Come, I'll see you back to your room.
Heraldin waved to Geist. So long. Watch out for those pigeons.
Don't worry, Niln said as they made their way back across the terrace. Geist may not do much here, but he's actually quite good with a blade. A rank 6 weapons master, in fact.
All the more reason to worry, said Gorm.
Excuse me? Said Niln.
Do you know the number 1 cause of death among professional heroes?
I'm fairly certain it's getting eaten by something or other.
Maybe a long time ago, but not any more.
Oh, is it falling in pits? Niln guessed. I heard a lot of heroes die because they don't have a rope.
Ain't pits.
We've bought several ropes, Niln offered feebly.
It's inter-party conflict,
Gorm spoke with a weariness born from experience.
He had lost many friends to fights within their party. Sometimes a hero had something to prove. Sometimes they had a different agenda. Sometimes there were spectacular battles, and sometimes there wasn't even a fight at all. A forgotten healing potion or a lever pulled at the wrong moment was all it took to be rid of an inconvenient companion. Whatever the cause or method, the leading killer of professional heroes was other professional heroes.
"You've got an unstable, suicidal man with a small arsenal in our camp," said Gorm, "and then you brought in a pair of mages with a history of burning down buildings, and a bard who keeps talking like he wants a punch in the face. No offense."
"None taken," said Heraldin. "You'd be surprised how often I hear that."
"I don't think I would," said Gorm. "The point is, you've assembled a better powder keg than a party. You think these people are going to fight together? Could you stand and face a tentacled horror from beyond time and space and know, absolutely know, that they'll have your back?"
Niln seemed at a loss for words. He looked to Heraldin, but the bard gave the scribe nothing more than a shrug before walking away.
"It's like I said before. You don't know what you're doing," Gorm pressed. "You can only play at being a hero for so long before the truth catches up to you and kills you in some horrible way. Professional heroics is all a laugh, until it isn't anymore."
"I'm not playing."
"Well, you sure as fire ain't a professional, and amateurs don't last long in a dungeon. You want to die for the Mad Queen, it's your business. But you're taking me and Gleebeck and the others along as well. Why drag all of us into it?"
Niln began, and then thought better of it and started over. "People always say that we must stand up for what we believe in."
"They're not talking to you," barked Gorm. "They're talking to people who don't believe in stupid things. They're talking to people who think the same way everyone else does, or something close enough."
Niln's mouth opened and closed like a fish on the shore.
"Come on, Gleebeck," Gorm said.
"Spurdy, Gleebeck Zugagnub de Bibbit."
Gorm made it to his chamber before Niln caught him.
"I can learn," the High Scribe called, running down the hall. "Maybe I don't know what I'm doing, but you do. You did it for years. I read about it. The time they called you the Pyrebeard. I'm willing to learn."
Gorm could see the earnestness in the man's eyes, next to the inexperience and the folly.
"But I ain't willing to teach," he said, and closed the door.
Gorm was half undressed for bed when he heard a knock on his door. Technically, Gleebeck was too, but the goblin was always half undressed. Gorm took a moment to throw on his chainmail and cloak before answering the knock. A relatively small member of the Silver Talons, wearing ill-fitting armor, informed them that Mr. Flynn expected Gorm to come and assist him with some recruitment.
"Why me?" asked Gorm. "Ain't he got a whole troop of ye Talons?"
"Oh, yes, sir," said the mercenary, pulling Gorm aside. "But if we were to, convince a hero to join us against his or her will, that's very much akin to capturing them, and attempting to capture or restrain heroes is very clearly thuggery. But the bulk of the Silver Talon's certified thugs are stationed in Aberyth, and here in Andoran we're mostly just goons."
"That makes sense," conceded Gorm.
The Thugs Union and the League of Goons existed to provide discreet protection and rule enforcement to private entities, but thugs also specialized in the control and suppression of licensed heroes. Plenty of taverns, shops, and politicians had a vested interest in keeping nearby heroes in line, and even the Heroes Guild employed thugs to retrieve or discipline wayward members. The Thugs Union maintained that heroes belonged deep in dungeons, not in intrigues, and it worked to protect the image of thuggery as a respected and valued part of society.
"Attempting to coerce guild members is very dangerous work," said the pimply little Silver Talon, which was true. Good thugs were nearly as fearsome as professional heroes. Mediocre thugs were famously short-lived. "Do you know what health insurance costs if you're dealing with professional heroes without thug certifications?"
"The premiums must be mad."
"Totally insane, sir. Technically, my policies could get voided just for talking to a hero for too long. So, if you could..."
Gorm thanked the young mercenary and sent him on his way. Once he was properly dressed, he made his way down to the sanctuary. Mr. Flynn greeted Gorm with a mocking bow.
"Ah, Mr. Ingerson, an honor. It's not every day that I stand in the presence of a hero of destiny."
"I was hoping it wouldn't be today either. We've no business, mercenary."
"I'm afraid I must correct you there."
"I signed the contract. I'm already recruited."
"Yes, and now you and I share an employer," said Mr. Flynn. "Master Niln sends a request that you join Mr. Brunt and myself in recruiting the sixth and final hero."
"Don't see why you'd need my help."
Our candidate is currently in one of the most disreputable establishments in one of the most unsavory districts of Andoran. More arms are always welcome.
Runt seems like a capable lad, said Gorm. I'm sure you can manage.
Perhaps you have forgotten the nature of the employer-employee relationship, Mr. Ingerson. When Master Niln sends an order, your opinion on the matter is optional. Your compliance is not. Mr. Flynn produced a small slip of paper with an address scrawled on it. You will meet us at this address in 1 hour. Wait outside for us, preferably with a professional smile. Gorm gave a professional smile, which was very much like baring his teeth at the gnome.
See you in an hour, he growled, and left the gnome to his own devices.
The address was outside of Andoran's walls in the River Downs, a network of rickety docks and ancient warehouses that looked to be slowly sinking into, or perhaps pulling themselves from, the Terrapin River. Gorm and Gleebeck made their way along a rotting boardwalk, past decrepit hovels and timber skeletons of boathouses, until they came to the tavern Flynn had directed them to. The Randy Goat leaned over the river's main channel, leering at the trade barges and river skiffs that bobbed on the water. Its broken windows glowed with a golden light in the sapphire evening. Through them rang laughter, swearing, and raucous commotion. Battered men, broken stools, and other wreckage from a bar brawl were heaped along the boardwalk outside. Gorm stamped up to the tavern, eyeing a sign that depicted a young barmaid trying to preserve her modesty while a mischievous goat consumed her skirt.
"He calls this disreputable?" he said to Gleebeck. "Meda took me to worse places when I was knee-high."
An unfortunate patron burst through a third-story window and plunged screaming into the swirling river. Gleebeck edged closer to Gorm.
"Fair enough," Gorm said, scowling at the window. "I still seen worse."
Gorm leaned against a dock post while he waited, and Gleebeck sat down uneasily on a large coil of barge rope. Whenever the goat's patrons quieted to a dull commotion, they could hear the terrapin burbling beneath them and the creaks and bumps of the barges tied at the docks down the way. It was well past the hour they had agreed upon when Mr. Flynn finally arrived, Brunt thundering along behind him. The Tinderkin greeted Gorm and Gleebeck cordially and thanked them for waiting.
"Just tell us what you want us to do," Gorm snorted.
"Wait here," said Flynn. Gorm felt the veins in his forehead throbbing.
"But you—"
"Not all of the heroes we recruit are as cooperative as yourself, Mr. Ingerson," said Mr. Flynn with a small laugh. "We need the exit covered should our newest recruit decide to flee."
"So we're just to stop anyone who comes running from the tavern?"
"Indeed," said Mr. Flynn. He watched a figure lurch out of the bar door and shamble down the causeway. "But with any luck it won't come to that. People usually can't walk straight after a stint at the goat, let alone make a successful run. Come, Mr. Brunt." Gorm glowered after the gnome and the ogre as they pushed their way into the bar.
"Drop that gizzard?"
"Nothing to be done," snorted Gorm.
He leaned back against the wall and startled something some way down a half-submerged alleyway.
"Hey!"
called a pile of rags, dragging itself from the shadows. It was a man, draped in old cloths and rusting chainmail. He stared at Gorm with dark eyes set in sallow skin and clutched his freely bleeding forearm.
"Hey, you gotta help me."
"Get lost," Gorm told him.
"I've been wounded,"
he gasped, crawling over to Gorm. His words came in bursts of gravelly slurring.
"I need salve. Bad. Got any salve?"
"Grab the gabasa,"
said Gleebeck, glancing worriedly at the man.
"What? No, don't worry about him. He's a salve head."
Gorm pantomimed a swig from an imaginary bottle.
"He's addicted to healing potions."
The miraculous elixirs known collectively as healing potions saved countless lives, but easy access to drafts that could bring a man from the brink of death to perfect health in seconds had some less pleasant consequences. It wasn't unusual for a hero to sustain multiple life-threatening wounds on any given quest, and a hero in demand might end up consuming his or her weight in salve during a busy month. After that much exposure to sorcerous healing, a person could begin to like the sensation of the elixirs, or even to need it. The streets of Arth's cities were littered with ex-heroes who had become too dependent on salve to adventure, or to find another job, or to do anything beyond acquire more healing potions. They sat in gutters and alleyways, hacking at themselves and bleeding on passers-by until they found someone either kind or disgusted enough to toss them the potion they craved. Some of the greatest heroes in history wound up bleeding to death on a busy sidewalk, waiting for someone to pass them a taste of elixir. Gleebec tugged at Gorm's cloak.
"It's a cobbett,"
the goblin insisted, pointing at the wounded man.
"No, look, you're being..."
Gorm shook his hands in consternation, and then tried to pantomime a man slitting his own wrists.
"He cut, see? Cut. Himself. He did it to get free potions."
The addict shook his grisly appendage at the dwarf.
"No, no, I didn't. Look, help. I got cut on a something. It was sharp."
"Sod off. I ain't got any healing potions anyway."
How about some gold, then? I can buy some at the goat."
"That's the last thing you need,"
Gorm grumbled, eyeing a couple of bleeding figures slumped outside the goat's door.
"Go see the Temple of Fulgen instead. They'll help you."
Hey, I'm a hero,"
cried the addict, pulling himself to his feet and staggering after them.
I can kill that goblin for you, for some gold, or salve."
Gleebec squeaked and ducked behind Gorm.
"Easy on the threats, lad," Gorm said. "He's an NPC.
The addict squinted in confusion.
You don't want me to kill the goblin?"
"Course not."
"Okay, fine."
The hero took an unstable step forward as he drew a bloody knife.
"Give me some gold, or I kill the goblin."
"Poppers!"
Gleebec chirped, presenting his documents.
"I ain't got time for this,"
grumbled Gorm, standing. He stamped up to the bleeding addict, grabbed him by the collar, pulled him closer, and delivered a punch like a hammer blow to the man's forehead. The man's eyes rolled back, and he collapsed with a feeble groan.
"Thrice cursed salve heads,"
Gorm muttered, shaking the grime off his hand. He started away, but then thought for a moment and returned to bind the man's wound with one of the fellow's cleaner rags. When the wound was stable, he relieved the unconscious hero of the dagger.
"Rotzob?"
"Payment for medical services,"
he explained to Gleebec, cleaning the blade on his cloak as he leaned back against the side of the goat. He offered the knife to Gleebec.
"Here,"
he said. The goblin seemed unsure what to do, as if this was the first time someone had ever pointed the dull end of a blade at him. He pointed to the weapon.
"Rogab pagti tibrin ixit nork?"
"Aye, whatever you said, take it."
Gleebec lifted the weapon with reverent claws and stood up straighter to carefully slide it into his fur belt.
"Rotha pagtis,"
he said fiercely.
"The clever."
"Aye, look, it's just a knife," said Gorm, trying to suppress a grin.
Flynn's voice rose above the goat's din.
"No, Mr. Brunt, this way. Yes, and mind that table. Oh, please excuse me."
"Sounds like Mr. Flynn'll be needin' us soon,"
Gorm told Gleebec.
"Grot?"
Someone else was shouting something, but Flynn cut him off.
"Mr. Brunt, would you assist this fellow in excusing us?"
Gorm took a step back, directing Gleebec to do the same. A moment later, the door was blasted from its hinges by an airborne bouncer, who skidded across the boardwalk and barely managed to avoid falling into the river by catching the edge of a plank. Brunt rumbled through the newly widened portal.
"Beg pardon,"
he roared, and then, noticing the bouncer dangling from the plank, he stomped heavily on the boardwalk. Boards shook and cracked under the force, neatly depositing the hapless bouncer in the river. The ogre gave a semi-satisfied snort.
"Woo! Look out!"
called an elf, stumbling through the doorway. She was tall, with slender features and long, pointed ears, as is the nature of elves, but she was shouting and gesturing in a way that wasn't elven at all. Her fern-green leather armor and matching jade and drake-hide bracers were stained with what Gorm could only hope was a spilled drink. She was the very image of grace and beauty, leaning on Flynn's shoulder to avoid falling on her face.
"Ah, Mr. Ingerson," said Flynn through gritted teeth. "Perhaps you and your squire would be so kind."
"I suppose,"
Gorm threw the elf's other arm over his shoulder. She reeked of spiced wine and grog. Flynn handed Gleebec a rucksack and a fine bow.
"Ah, excellent. It has been, shall we say, an eventful outing." "I'm a hero of destiny," hollered the elf. "Apologies, I forget my manners," said Flynn, grimacing. "May I introduce—"
"Hey, someone's gonna pay for that door!"
someone shouted from behind them.
"Settle the bill, Mr. Brunt," snapped Flynn.
A scream and a splash indicated Brunt had done so. "Now then," said Flynn as they continued down the boardwalk, "may I introduce—"
"Shh!"
hushed the elf, slapping her hand over the gnome's mouth. Her head inclined back, and she rolled her eyes at Gorm.
"Are you a hero of destiny?"
she whispered.
"So they say," Gorm ventured.
"Me too,"
gushed the elf. Flynn finished prying her fingers away from his lips. "This is Caitha," he snarled. Caitha vomited, prompting a momentary halt in the procession.
"Charmed," said Gorm.
When he awoke, it took Gorm a moment to take stock of the situation. He was still in the Temple of Almatra, which was bad. He had been out late at a tavern, which was usually good, but he hadn't had a drop to drink there, which was unusual and bad. He wasn't hungover, which was unfamiliar but not necessarily unpleasant. Now he could see the sun rising through his window, which was also unfamiliar and certainly unpleasant, and someone was still quietly knocking at his door. All in all, Gorm was in a pretty foul mood when he answered it.
"Hello. Sorry,"
said Caitha. She had cleaned up and pulled her long hair into a ponytail. Her lips were set in a playful, helpless pout that would make most men subconsciously shift from groggy annoyance to alert and helpful. Dwarves, however, are closer to eunuchs than they are to most men.
"What are you doing here?"
Gorm growled.
"That's just the thing I'd like to know," said the elf, stepping into his room. "Well, one of the things also of interest are, where am I, who are you, and why is there a goblin with a dead rat in your bedchambers?"
"You don't remember a thing?"
"I remember several things, just not how they fit together, or what goes in the middle."
"I'm Gorm Ingerson, the goblin's me squire."
"Gleebeck!"
"Unusual. The dead rat?"
"I don't know where he gets them, but I'm pretty sure it's breakfast."
"I see," Caitha thought for a moment. "You can call me Caitha."
"We met last night."
"About that," said Caitha. "Any idea what happened?"
"Do you remember the Almatran prophecy?" Gorm asked.
"Is that a new name for a terrapin topspin? I think I had one of those."
"A what?"
"It's moon wine, grog, and a twist of grundent juice on salted ice."
"What?"
"It's good. You can't even taste the grog."
"I ain't talking about a drink."
"Then I don't know what you are talking about."
"I'm talking about how you signed on with the Almatran Temple to be one of the 7 heroes of thrice-cursed destiny."
Caitha shook her head.
"No, I'm pretty sure I'd remember if I did."
"And I'd remember vomiting on someone's boots, but you still ain't apologized for that."
"Oh, sorry," said the elf, rubbing her temples. "Gods, I probably did sign up with... who? The Almatrans? Bones," she swore.
"Aye, that must have been one titan of a drink."
"Or 4, said Caitha. "Okay. Okay, I can handle this. We'll go get breakfast. I'll get Leary. He can get me out of this."
"If you say so," said Gorm. "I'm going back to bed."
"Sure you won't come? I'm buying."
Gorm was already brushing past her down the hall.
"Let's go, Gleebeck. Leave the rat."
Mr. Flynn and Mr. Brunt were seated near the front door. A board with a set of thrones pieces was set between them, but Gorm noticed that only Flynn was making moves.
"Ah, Lady Caitha and Mr. Ingerson, might I ask where you're off to?"
"Breakfast," said Caitha. "We'll be back once I've sorted this contract out."
"That's fine," said Mr. Flynn, "provided you have it sorted out by lunch. The heroes of destiny are expected at a meeting of the utmost importance."
"Oh, I hope to be back well before then."
"See that you are. Mr. Brunt didn't get enough sleep last night, and now he's in a foul mood."
Gorm looked up at the ogre's vacant, angry stare.
"With Brunt, how can you tell?"
Mr. Flynn's lips curled into a dark smile.
"I'd encourage you not to find out, Mr. Ingerson."
An hour later, they were seated around a tiny wrought iron table on Pinnacle Plaza, the great terrace on the topmost tier of the city. Boutique shops, coffee stands, tea houses, and popular eateries formed a neat semicircle around the plaza, sending small tables and chairs creeping toward the statue at the plaza's center. Behind the statue sat the Temple of Tandos, and beyond that, built into the highest slopes of Mount Windspar, was the Palace of Andoran.
"You haven't touched your breakfast," Caitha said.
"I'm scared it'll blow away if I disturb it," said Gorm, looking in disgust at his plate.
He was a firm believer that the best meals were made by holding dead things over a fire until they smelled good. As far as he was concerned, the tiny pile of twisted fruits and exotic extracts set before him was a blasphemy. It was elven cuisine, but then most things up at the pinnacle were elven. Many elves had old money. Some of them were already rich when the Freedlands were still forming.
"It's good. Try it."
"This stuff cost more than me boots," Gorm grumbled.
He scooped up a forkful of mashed plant matter and chewed thoughtfully.
"And I'm pretty sure it don't taste as good," he added, sliding his plate to Gleebeck.
"Caitha!"
The heaviest elf Gorm had ever seen charged toward them, holding his thick black spectacles to his head as he ran. He wore his silver hair pulled back behind his pointed ears, and a thin beard traced the generous circumference of his uppermost chin.
"Caitha to Althuanessa, Malahiasi, Lilana, Terethi."
"I always know I'm in trouble when Leary uses my full name," Caitha said to Gorm.
"Who is this guy?"
"Leary. He's my agent."
"Lilia, Muasa Natala, Bay, Iluvia."
"You've got an agent?"
"Oh yeah, I'm in high demand. I mean, not as much as I used to be, but still."
Gorm suddenly recalled hearing tales of a woman with jade and drake hide bracers, a shadow in an emerald cloak who slew terrible monsters before the beasts ever saw her.
"You're the Jade Wind."
"Yeah, that's right,"
Caitha said with a small smile. Leary was growing scarlet in the face.
"Yenilne, Loela, Toranga, McGracy."
"Me da used to tell me about you. You saved his da from the Hydra of Gauntcrag when he was a wee lad."
"Oh?"
Caitha's smile was losing steam.
"That's great."
"Asante, Tila, Layla, Nil, Tyriath,"
Leary finished.
"What am I to do with you, signing on with the Almatrans?"
Caitha ignored him.
"Gorm, this is Leary. Leary, Gorm Ingerson, and his squire Gleebeck."
"Pleasure," said Leary. "The Pyrebeard, right? Tough luck on the Ezanon business, kid. Pay us a visit, maybe we can make it work."
He flipped Gorm a small white card, which said, in embossed cardinal red letters, "Leary, House Allantel, Agent of Heroes, 34 Greenwine Avenue, 42nd Tier, Andoran." Gorm read the card.
"Not many agents are interested in working with me these days."
"You'd be surprised. I work with a lot of problem cases," Leary said. "Look at this one here. Am I right? I mean, Caitha, sweetheart, how many gutters have I dragged you out of? How many times have I had to convince the mayor of some backwater that you weren't too wasted to kill a bugbear or an owlbear or an owlvarine? And now this is how you repay me? The Almatrans?"
"I know, Leary, I know," Caitha sighed. "That's why I sent for you. You've got to fix this."
"Fix this? Fix it? What is there to fix? I..."
A thought struck Leary.
"Gorm and, Glubduck, whatever. Listen, I need a moment with my client."
"Right you are," said Gorm.
He grabbed his coffee, motioned for Gleebeck to follow him, and walked closer to the edge of the plaza. All of Andoran spread out before him, gray granite and white marble and cobalt and teal slate roofs, and beyond it, the plains of Bonn. The view was all the more breathtaking for the cloudless azure sky. Behind him, things sounded like they were considerably stormier. Much of the fight was too low to be heard, whispered or hissed or choked in fits of sobbing. Gorm could only make out small, unpleasant snippets of conversation. The lawyer monks of Ad Chul were brought up more than once, as was the Randy Goat, and alcohol, and Caitha hanging out with losers. At the mention of losers, Gorm mentally added Leary to his list. It wasn't a good list to be on. It was said that the only thing that could outlast dwarven craftsmanship was a dwarven grudge.
"You're a carriage wreck," Leary thundered. "You were a spectacle, and now even that's getting old."
"You can't say that," said Caitha. "You can't..."
She trailed off, weeping. Gorm noticed a noblewoman sneering at Gleebeck and shot her his most vicious professional smile. She scowled and hurried away. Satisfied, he turned back to the view of the city. Gleebeck sat next to him, eating a dead rat.
"Where do you find those bloody things?"
he asked the goblin.
"Rat?"
The fight blew over, eventually. Leary thundered and blustered himself out, and then moved on. Gorm turned to survey the wreckage. Caitha was slumped over the table, looking smaller and sadder than an elven breakfast. Her red-rimmed eyes watched her fingers trace a small pattern on the table. She didn't look up when Gorm and Gleebeck took their seats again.
I haven't finished a quest in more than 40 years, she said. I can get them started. I try, I really do. And then I just feel like I need, you know, something to take the edge off, and it gets all messed up.
Gorm nodded. It wasn't exactly his song, but it was in the same key.
And of course, everyone's heard of the Jade Wind, she said, her voice a hollow husk. And they all know what I used to be. And they keep on telling me the stories, the thrice-cursed stories, of what the Jade Wind did, and who she saved, and how she did it. And I hear them whispering about what a shame it is that such an amazing ranger could come to this. And I'm sick of hearing about the Jade Wind, because I don't know her any better than you do.
The oldest elves were older than Andoran, some even older than the race of dwarves. However, it was almost impossible to identify the eldest among them with any certainty, because how elves look does not change over time, while, crucially, who they are changes quite a lot. An indefinite lifespan is not the same thing as an infinite memory. Time erodes events into stories, stories into recollections, recollections into impressions, impressions into vague sensations that eventually dim altogether. An elf's old life was always trickling away, being replaced by new memories, new ideas, and eventually, for all intents and purposes, a new elf.
I haven't been the Jade Wind for a long time, Caitha said. I've been the person trying to be the Jade Wind again. Leary said he could make it happen, but now he's gone. And he was the last agent who'd take me, so I guess my career is too.
Gorm watched a falcon circling overhead.
They used to call me Pyrebeard, he said. I used to run the biggest quests, slay the nastiest beasts. I was gonna be as big as, well, as big as you were. And then I messed up once. Just once. And now I'm here.
The moment of camaraderie brought a small smile from Caitha.
And now we're a part of this Almatran madness.
She laughed and gave a long sigh.
How are we going to get out of this?
I don't think we are, said Gorm. Not any time soon. Might as well get used to it.
Caitha looked out over the edge of the plaza, across the city.
Did you ever hear of the Aethon Alassi?
My elven's a little rusty, on account of me never learning it.
The Imperial tongue calls it the wide-gulleted Bobbinjay.
Her mouth twisted at the taste of the translation. Most elves consider the Imperial language to be crude, graceless, and discordant, largely because it is. It's also precise, broad, and nearly universal, making it a necessary evil.
It's a beautiful little bird with a sacred voice. The lords and ladies of my people will gladly spend thousands of gilten to entice them to their balconies, just in the hope of hearing a song.
Thousands?
Easily thousands. Tens of thousands. Aeth and Alassi need the right trees, the right flowers. It can't be too cold or too warm. The balcony has to be at the height they like. And if you do it just right, an Aeth and Alassi may decide to perch on your rail and sing for hours.
I can buy a birdcage for 12 gilden, said Gorm.
That's the point. If you want the song, you can never cage one. Once it's behind the bars, it goes silent. It might even beat itself to death against the cage. Do you see what I'm saying?
Birds are daft.
Gorm grabbed a roll off a passing waitress's platter.
No, the bird won't be caged.
I'd take it over being beaten to death against iron bars, said Gorm.
He broke off a piece of the roll and offered it to Caitha.
That is the song of the Aeth and Alassi, she said, waving the bread away. That is why its voice is sacred. Wherever you go, go because you decided to. Never let anyone cage you. Find your freedom.
All right, I got one for you,
said Gorm, handing half of the roll to Gleebec.
Ever hear of the warbling slate claw?
No, I don't think so.
Big ugly badger with claws like stone. Digs tunnels up in the Ironbreaker Mountains and the Black Cliffs. Only singing mustelid in the world. Dwarves everywhere used to want 'em as pets, till they found out what miserable beasts the slate claws are. Take one in, and it'll claim your favorite chair, and sing songs that'll run your spine inside out, unless you give the furry bastard its favorite treats.
He mimicked a horrible yodeling, and then silenced himself with a bite of bread. Caitha smiled.
I'm wondering where this is going.
That's the song of the warbling slate claw. Wherever you go, there you are. Try to find the comfy chair.
Gorm leaned back in his seat and shook the half-eaten roll at the laughing elf.
And see if you can grab a free meal.